Welcome to the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting of August 20th. Can we please call the roll?
Committee Chair Peterson?
Here.
Chair Wolf?
Here.
Director Darcy?
Here.
Director Gonzalez?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Any public comment? Was it aware of any? No public comment. First item under item four is approval of the minutes of the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting held on July 16th of 2014. Were there any changes or additions to those minutes? There being none, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Minutes are approved. I don't have any additional items. I'm going to turn it over to the Executive Director, Christie.
Thank you. We've got a couple of presentations on the deck today. I hope I'm not taking these out of order, but I think that the first one we were going to do was a quarterly financial review. As you know, we always kind of check each quarter after it's closed out where we stand relative to the budget. And I think we've got Mike Kelch and Kathy Williams who are going to be providing the overview of where we stand in the second quarter. And I'm not going to steal their thunder this time, so I'm going to make you wait for the presentation to see what.
It's what I live for.
Told you can have background music and fire.
All right. So this is our new and improved version. Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
As Christie mentioned, we wanted to briefly go through a review of the second quarter results. What you'll see in the second quarter is that we had positive or favorable results in both revenue, expenditures, and reduced debt service costs. So kind of across the board, we had favorable results in the second quarter. This was a good thing because in the first quarter, if you recall, we had severe winter conditions. We had some reduced revenue as a result of those winter conditions. And we had some higher expenses, particularly in the area of winter materials use and payroll costs, overtime and so forth for the roadway, the plow work and so forth. With respect to revenue, it totaled $266.9 million. That was about $6.4 million over budget. It was primarily toll revenue. Toll revenue and evasion recovery, 2% more than what we had budgeted for the second quarter. We did have an increase in miscellaneous revenue as well. In maintenance and operations, and we'll go through this a little bit more in detail on subsequent slides, maintenance and operations expenditures were down about $1.8 million from what we budgeted. And the capital program, we expended $92 million less than we had forecast last October during the second quarter. With respect to the revenue sources and allocations, we tried to throw a pie chart in here instead of tables. Again, $1.016 billion in revenue in total for the year. It was allocated about $295 million for operations, $334 million for debt service, and $386 million that was available to fund capital improvements out of our current revenue. And I know it's difficult to see, but hopefully you'll be able to see it on the hard copy. With respect to a little bit more detail about the second quarter revenue, as you can see, revenue, toll revenue and evasion recovery up $5.1 million, or about 2% in the second quarter. Commercial vehicle traffic continues to be strong this year. 6.6% year-to-year growth during the second quarter. That's a pretty solid indicator that the economy is improving. Passenger vehicles grew as well in the second quarter, about 3.5% over last year and 1% greater than budget. To show that the second quarter toll revenue did exceed projections, and you can see the trend from the beginning of the year. Recall, I mentioned on the first slide that revenue was down in the first quarter. It was actually down about $4.8 million. So the $6.4 million favorable revenue variance in the second quarter actually more than offset that. Toll revenue and evasion recovery in total is almost equal to our projection through the second quarter, but we did have more miscellaneous revenue through the first half of the year than we had projected. That accounts for it. But you can see the is that a blue bar? The blue bar represents what we budgeted for each of those months, and the green bar represents what the actual was for each of those months for toll revenue. And you can see the impact of the winter weather in January, February, and even March. But then in April, May, and June, you can see the positive results there. Detail on the operating maintenance and operations budget. Again, payroll and related costs were over budget by a little more than $1 million in the first quarter, but due to vacancies and an effort to keep overtime down in the second quarter, we had a favorable variance in payroll and related costs of $800,000 in the second quarter. So we are still slightly over on payroll, but getting getting that difference down and through the year to date. With respect to materials operating supplies, that was actually down in the second quarter as well. But in large part, that's due to the fact that we did not restock some of the winter materials that we had would have typically done in prior years. Actually, a salt contract with CMS expired. I think one of the items, or a couple of the items that we have on the agenda this morning, relate to winter materials, salt in particular. This is going to be an area where we do have an increased expense in the second half of the year relative to what we had expected. It's going to be a budgetary pressure. We're going to attempt to accommodate that through transferring funds around within the budget, but it's possible that as we go through the 2015 budget process, it's an area that we'll have to revisit for 2014. It's possible that we will have to request or recommend some additional funding for the 2014 budget in order to accommodate those salt purchases. Finally, down in equipment rental and maintenance, we were well below budget in that area. That's reduced software maintenance in IT and in the traffic management area. Some of this is timing, so I don't know that we're going to see that favorable result by the end of the year. On the capital program, the second quarter spending was about $87 million below what we had projected with the PMO had projected with respect to the second quarter. We also had IGA reimbursements that we hadn't planned for in the budget. We actually knew that we knew we have agreements, but we don't count on them until the revenue comes in. So we show a favorable variance of a reduced spending of $92 million in the second quarter. Most of that is related to timing. Some of that, a significant portion as well, is due to project cost savings in the form of reduced contract bids relative to what we had projected at the start of the year, as well as closeout savings on contracts. And as you can see, the main areas are where we have the big spending: Jane Addams, system-wide improvements, and the interchange at 294 and 57. So in summary, second quarter, revenue above target, maintenance operations slightly below, $1.8 million. Another area that we hadn't spoken to, debt service transfers are well below budget, so if we do have those winter materials costs that we can't accommodate within the current operating budget, we feel like there's significant room to transfer funds around to also from the, or to reallocate funds from debt service to operating costs to accommodate that should we need to. And debt service costs were down because our interest costs were slightly lower than what we had anticipated. And we had a refunding. Recall we had a refunding issue that we did earlier this year. And finally, we had put some money in to do a restructuring of the synthetic fixed rate debt, which at this point did not meet targets to do in terms of the cost of doing that. So, and year to date, our revenue is now above budget by $1.6 million. Maintenance and operations is $1 million below, but again, parts and fuel and winter materials are areas that we're going to be monitoring and watching in the second half of the year, and we believe maybe pressure in the second half of the year. Debt service transfers through the first 6 months are $12.4 million less than budget. And year-to-date capital program expenditures are about $127 million below projection. Remember, that projection was done in around last October. We actually have, in our first bond issue this year, that estimate was revisited. We lowered the projection at that time about $100 million. So some of this variance, at least relative to the last time we did a forecast in the first quarter, was expected, was anticipated. Any questions?
Do you anticipate the increased traffic and the miscellaneous revenue will continue on in the third quarter?
We're feeling like, and discussing with CDM Smith, that the commercial vehicle traffic in particular, we don't see a reversal in that trend, so it looks favorable for that trend to continue. You know, they can really speak to that better than I can, but from the brief conversations that we've had, they feel good about 2014. On toll revenue. The miscellaneous is a lot of times that revenue is just one-time events that occur, so I would not say that that's likely to occur that in the second half.
Maintenance operations budget, did you guys anticipate that the salt contracts were expired? Did they expire this year? Is that what happened?
I think we did. We didn't anticipate having to purchase as much as we did. We didn't anticipate the
severe winter.
With respect to the timing of the expiration of the contract,
It's normal.
I think they expire annually. There was a renewal on the CMS master contract that was available.
Correct.
One of the issues is there's not enough quantity on that contract, given all the quantity we used last year to refill our stores, which is why we had to do extra contracts. And, you know, blended, I think we got fairly decent pricing, but it's certainly higher than the price that we were purchasing from last year. So we'll be doing a presentation on winter materials shortly, but I don't think in the budget would have planned for kind of the volume of replenishment that we're going to have to be prepared for this winter.
Right.
Any questions? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
We have several more presentations. I'll introduce the presentations.
Oh, good. I'm happy to do it. So next up is Shauna Whitehead, who is going to present. We have some inactive iPass accounts. Hard to believe that everybody isn't using their iPass transponder on a daily basis, but apparently there are some accounts that have been inactive for a long period of time. We do have some legal requirements relative to what we need to do with those balances and funds after a certain amount of activity. So Sean is going to talk through what we're proposing to do with these inactive account funds that hopefully will make some customers happy, or families of customers, or distant relations of customers, or what have you. So Shauna?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I am very pleased to be presenting about money we are ready to give back, to hand back to our customers. Reclaiming inactive iPass account funds. This is just a kind of intro slide to remind everybody of how big we are. In the tolling world, we really are giants. We have 2.2 million daily transactions. We have more than 3.6 million iPass accounts and more than 5 million iPass transponders out there. So we've been around long enough now that there are accounts that are starting to be labeled as inactive. Under the Illinois Unclaimed Property Act, accounts that are inactive for at least 7 years need to be considered unclaimed funds and need to be funneled back to the customers who had originally opened those accounts. We have a little over $2 million in unclaimed funds, $2.2 million, which represents a mix of tolls and the transponder deposits. So it's about $1.5 million in tolls and about $700,000 in transponder deposits. So these are accounts that have not had a toll posted or any financial transaction for over 7 years. There are 59,000 of them. The average account balance is exceeding $10, is $31 without a transponder deposit. And we have about 500 accounts with funds totaling $100 or more. So we are getting ready to reach out to all of our customers and tell them, if you've been inactive, not all of our customers, but our inactive customers, you have a few different choices. They need to respond to us by October 1st. The first choice is that the customer can reactivate their iPass account. They can call us. Maybe they'll get the letter and they'll say, you know, I had kind of forgotten that I had that. I would like to keep it. I don't want it to just be closed. So, yes, let me call and make sure that it remains active. They can call us and close it. They can call us and say, I would like to officially close it, and I would like you to go ahead and issue the refund check to my address. Or they can take no action at all, in which case we will close the iPass account and transfer those funds to the iCash program. And then I guess the question is, what is the iCash program? The iCash program was established as part of the Unclaimed Property Act, and it's property that gets remitted to the state treasurer's office. So this is unclaimed property from inactive accounts or things like that, that then goes to reside at the state treasurer's office until it gets claimed. If anybody's ever done kind of a web search on their name to see if they have unclaimed funds, that you would have gone here. I've gone here. I do not have any unclaimed funds. I was a little disappointed. One in eight Illinois residents has an asset to be claimed through that iCash program, and the state has over $2 billion in it that needs to be returned to Illinois residents. And when we do contact the customers, we'll be sending out letters, and we'll be directing them if they want to call and keep active or actually close their accounts. They can call us, they can visit us in person, they can mail their transponders back to us in our fulfillment center at Ada McKinley. We'll take care of that and close their accounts. And then we will have information online as well on our website, and then everybody's welcome to visit iCash Illinois as those funds get transferred. So October 1st will be that date where we hear from the last of those customers, and then we transfer the funds down to the treasurer's office.
So you notify by letter, and then they don't respond. Is there so many days to respond in that window?
October 1st. So the letters will go out in a few days. Actually, I think they go out today, and then they will have 60 days to respond.
And if they don't respond, then we don't notify them again or try to reach them unless?
No, we don't. In part because in the unclaimed property world, it's actually not that easy to hunt somebody down. So we'll do our best to contact them at their, you know, their reported residence to us. But beyond that, it'll be either they'll hear about it through the news, or they will find their funds on iCash like so many people do, just by looking.
So that was a nice question. Are we going to publicize it, or are we going to do any announcement?
We will announce it, yes. And it will be on our website, but I believe there's a formal press announcement that will go out about it as well.
Any conjecture about what percentage of those we're likely to hear from?
I might have to ask Mike Kelch, who's been through this process before, but my experience with things like it is that it's very small, that people actively...
Yeah, we haven't done iPass accounts before. On the other smaller unclaimed property amounts, we've had a very minimal response. But this is going to be a little bit higher profile outreach and so forth, so it may be more, maybe better.
So we'll do a press release about it to try to get the word out. People can be watching for the letters, and we'll see. Maybe they'll find out. I have found out that I have unclaimed property from an overpaid utility bill when I was in college.
Overpaid?
Yes. Which just shows you what type of college student I was.
Exactly.
Overpaid my ComEd bill. Speaks to something about me, I'm sure. But anyway, thank you, Shauna.
And Shauna, you referenced the families and so forth. I assume if the person's deceased, that there's a way for family to claim them.
ICASH
takes care of that. Do we do that, or do we turn it over to ICASH and let them do that?
Well, if they contact us, we'll go through the normal process of working with the estate, whoever's next speaker.
But once it's out of our hands, then ICASH it.
Good, thank you.
Thanks.
So, last but not least, when it comes to the presentations, is our winter materials presentation. We are getting ready for winter. It's horrible to even contemplate in August, but we are. As you know, we had a particularly hard winter last year, and the tollway performed very well. I think our maintenance teams and everybody did a tremendous job responding to a pretty severe winter, and you'll see from the presentation just how severe it was relative to what we normally see. But we do need to, we did want to give you a kind of some foundational knowledge, since there are a couple of salt contracts on deck, and we will be, as Mike mentioned, kind of looking to our budget and managing our budget, particularly over the next quarter, to see what we need to do to make sure we can accommodate the purchase of all the materials we need. We're confident that we'll be able to. But we'll have to keep you apprised of just, you know, what the plan is in that regard. So, John, if you want to go ahead and let us know what we're doing to get ready for winter.
Right. And like you said, it's unfortunate that we're worried about it right now, but this is the time to be planning for the winter. So, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So, some may have forgotten how brutal last winter was, but let me be clear. The people who were involved in the winter operations, or my staff in procurement, to making sure they had the appropriate materials last year to make it through the season, we definitely didn't forget it. So we feel like it hasn't ended yet, actually. So again, you know, we just want to give you an overall brief overview of what our plans are to make sure that we have the appropriate materials for this upcoming season, especially our key snow and ice removal commodities. And again, we're aggressively making sure that we have the appropriate quantities on hand for the upcoming season. So before I explain these commodities and discuss our plans, I wanted to show everyone this table some key statistics from our last winter season. Again, some of you may recall that we had a lot of storms. The official number on the record, we had 38 winter storms last season. And you compare that to 2012-13 season of only 19 or 25 for our 12-year average. So our trucks were out on the roads pretty much nonstop the whole season. Ice events, maybe not as bad. You'd think it'd be worse. We only had four, which is greater than the 2012-13 season, but a little bit lower than our 12-year season average at five. Now, snowfall. You know, as far as snowfall is considered, it was the second snowiest snowfall in the tollway's history at 80.6 inches. Again, it's the 2012-13 average was, or snowfall number was 28 inches. And the 12-year average is a little bit over 42. So we almost doubled the amount of snowfall that we had, you know, compared to our 12-year average. So what does all this mean? So it means that now we have to apply more of these materials. We had to apply more of these materials to keep our roads clear and safe for the motoring public. Salt is used as our main snow and ice control material and used in nearly every weather condition. As you can see, we used a little over 86,000 tons of rock salt last season compared to a 12-year average of approximately 69,000 tons. Roadway abrasives and liquid calcium chloride are the other two key commodities that we use for our snow and ice removal operations and are used in conjunction with salt when temperatures dip below 20 degrees, that's when rock salt starts to lose its effectiveness. The abrasives help to keep snow from packing on the pavement at lower temperatures, as I just described. This creates better traction for the vehicles and makes it easier to keep the pavement clear when the snowfall ends. Since the temperature was consistently colder last season, we used approximately a little over 19,000 tons of this material. And again, as you can see from the table, it's five times greater than our 2012-2013 season, a little over 3,800. Liquid calcium chloride can melt snow and ice at much colder temperatures than salt and is effective at sub-zero temperatures. It's often used with a salt abrasive mix under these severe conditions. The liquid calcium chloride is sprayed at the point of discharge. It is exothermic, which means it generates heat and starts the brine process immediately, providing better traction to the pavement. And again, we use 65,868 gallons of this material compared to 26,000 the season before. Okay, so now that you have a better understanding of the key materials and quantities that we utilized last winter, I'd like to discuss what our plan of attack is for the upcoming season. So as Mike Kelsch had stated earlier, and I think Christy mentioned it, multiple contracts were needed to ensure that we have an adequate supply of salt to restock our domes and ensure that we have enough salt to make it through the upcoming season. Tollway usually has a minimum of 35 to 40,000 tons of salt in our domes at the end of a winter season. Well, this year, because of the severity of the weather, we only have approximately 10,000 tons on hand, which is, you know, approximately 10% of our capacity system-wide. And we usually start the winter season with our domes a little bit over 80% of a full of capacity, or of capacity. So this season, we expect to, you know, with these three contracts, we expect just to have under 83,000 tons of salt on hand before the season begins, which is approximately 84% of our capacity. So we need to bridge that gap, and here's how we're going to do it. So we have contract avenues to purchase a maximum of 123,040 tons of salt. And here's how we plan to accomplish this. So again, going on last year, CMS did renew their master contract. In that contract, that renewal will allow the tollway to purchase a maximum of 86,040 tons at a weighted average cost of $55.50 per ton. So knowing that wouldn't be enough salt to get us through the winter, IDOT's in the same position, and several local governments and municipalities, CMS issued a new invitation for bid seeking offers from the vendor community for additional salt quantities. But this contract, which is an order against the master for us, we're only going to be able to purchase 4,000 tons at a weighted average cost of $126.34 per ton. So during this bid process, we only received two offers for our 15 sites. So we still have...
Meaning that each site was a different offer,
right?
And only two were actually bid on.
The correct. Didn't receive so of our 15 sites, only two locations received an offer.
And did I hear right? It was 55 under the old contract and 122 under the new?
So 126, yes.
126, so it's double?
Yes.
Then, yeah.
Yes. So, in light of this, we knew we needed coverage for these 13 additional locations that didn't receive a bid from the CMS procurement. So, the demand for this commodity is extremely high this year, mainly due to the severe weather nationwide last season. We knew we had to react immediately or we'd run the risk of paying more per ton and potentially not receiving the required quantities. So, because of this risk and the duration of the formal procurement process, We decided to purchase the remaining 33,000 tons through a tollway-issued emergency procurement, which was competitively bid. So the CPO's office in Springfield concurred with our recommendation, and through the process, the emergency procurement was sourced at a weighted average cost of $101.35 per ton. So a little bit lower than the last procurement that I mentioned. But the important thing to know, with all three of these contracts, the weighted average cost for all three of them is a little over $70 a ton. Okay, and again, that's because the renewal amount that has $55 per ton salt, you know, is a little bit over two-thirds of our requirement for this upcoming season. Okay. So moving on to abrasives.
May I
yes.
ask a perverse question? I thought the purpose of master contracts with CMS was that they bought, buy in bulk, they get a low price, and they can help us deal with problems like this. But did they have a maximum on the...
They did, and that was one of the challenges, and I guess I could get into the details. So when CMS put out their solicitation, and they have all estimated quantities from us, IDOT, and all the local governments, municipalities, we are required by the terms of that procurement to purchase a minimum of 80% of our estimated quantity, but the vendor must fulfill up to 120% of the estimated quantities that are listed. Mm-hmm. So that poses a little bit more risk on the vendor community. So during our emergency procurement, knowing about that risk, we said we are looking for 33,000 tons one-time purchase. So we were going to purchase 100% of that quantity.
So a couple different things in play. The 80-120 rules were certainly in place for the renewal, right?
Yes.
But we got $55 ton-ish pricing on that. They were also in place on the new invitations for bid, correct?
Yes.
So there was this kind of window of 80 up to 120 purchase. We think that we may have gotten slightly better pricing on our emergency because we were very specific about what we wanted, but we still, you know, the vast majority that we are purchasing is through that CMS master renewal, and we're getting obviously a much better price there than, you know, going out to the market with new contracts either on our own or those invitations for bid, just because the supplies are so low. And it's interesting because I remember going into last year because we had had such a light winter the winter before, we were a little concerned. And other communities were concerned. They were asking us if we could store material for them. You know, we weren't sure if we were going to need even the whole 80% of our order. And those seem like rosy days of blissful ignorance on our part. But that is, you know, one of the reasons why I think that range happens.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the 12-year average. I guess CMS was facing their maximums and minimums on what had happened in the past. It's a real outlier.
Well, and on the information we gave them, we provided to them. So.
And if it wasn't so cold last year, we would have used more rock salt. Again, the salt loses its effectiveness when the temperatures dip below 20, and therefore we use a lot more abrasives than we typically do. But if that temperature was above 20, you know, that number would definitely have been well higher than what we mm-hmm. utilized.
Okay.
So, and something else to know, you know, I'm glad we acted when we did because CMS did issue a rebid to cover the sites that didn't receive an offer. And of that rebid, which was just due yesterday, I think out of 87 locations, none of which were the tollways, they only received offers for 20-something of those locations. And the prices are much higher than what we received during our emergency procurement process. Okay. So roadway abrasives, again, because we typically apply this material when the temperatures go a little bit below 20 degrees, we use approximately 5 times the amount of abrasives last season compared to our 12-season average, or I'm sorry, the 2012 and 2013 season. So as you may recall, again, it was bitterly cold early on and just remained consistent throughout the whole season. So unlike rock salt, you know, which is scarce this year, we don't anticipate the same problems in obtaining more abrasives if required beyond our contractual obligation. The weighted average cost per ton is $18.60 for this material, which is pretty much in line with the last several years in which we paid. So similar to roadway abrasives, we don't anticipate any issues in meeting our requirements of liquid calcium chloride this season. Although the CMS master contract does expire at the end of October, additional quantities can be acquired through a small purchase if needed. We do feel comfortable with the current contract that's in place. We used 65,000 gallons of this commodity last year. We have 20,000 gallons on hand right now, and we still have the ability to purchase almost 43,000 gallons on the current existing contract. And again, this is another item that's not scarce, and we wouldn't have any problems obtaining it if need be. Winter operations costs. So this chart represents our winter operations costs for the last 6 seasons. And the black line represents our 12-year average. As you can see, that the last season was the costliest in the last 6 years, and well above our 12-year average. And in this chart includes not only the material cost, but also includes the labor and equipment costs as well. So, what are our budgetary impacts for 2014? I think Mike had alluded to this a little bit earlier, but due to all the salt and other materials that we used last season and the salt that we need to purchase, to fill up our domes this year, we will exceed our budget amount for the rock salt. We will accommodate some of this through the internal budget transfers, and if necessary, we may seek additional funding later this year. The important thing to know is that we have the appropriate mechanisms in place to restore our key winter commodities for the upcoming season to healthy levels. Any questions?
Do you put rock salt down no matter what the temperature is?
I believe we do.
And all then abrasives. And when it's really cold, then the abrasive. And so it's like a three-layer process.
Yes. We just start backing off our rock salt a little bit and start applying abrasives and the liquid calcium chloride. Yes.
For the colder temperature.
It's a lot cheaper to be really cold than over 20, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, if you look at it per ton.
Yes, per ton, I'm saying the more you use. This is probably appropriately directed Darcy question. It is outside the scope of this, but because it was such a rough winter, do we anticipate more wear and tear than we average on our equipment too? So we're going to have trucks and bulldozers and dump and other things.
More plow blades will be needed.
I think one of the areas where there's going to be budget pressure is on parts, and that's a reflection of the impact that it's had on our vehicles. And like you were saying, it's cheaper during the colder temperatures, and the calcium chloride does take a bigger toll on our vehicles than just handling the salt. So we saw a lot of deterioration from the high use of that material also.
It's parts, and then eventually I assume it will be the replacement of the vehicles on a faster schedule than usual, it's hard to know how that's going
to work. I haven't heard that from Fleet, that we would be looking to replace any vehicle sooner than normal, but there has been some pressure on the parts category.
Well, we do know during the season when the trucks are on the road, the engine hours are accumulating, right? Mm-hmm. So what we noticed throughout the season that we were spending much more money on engine oil and lubricants, because after so many engine hours of running, we have to change the oil in these trucks. And we were going through oil like crazy last season just to keep up with it and make sure that we didn't pass that required time to change the oil. So we're consistently doing that. We are consistently changing our plow blades because they're on the road consistently. And, the more the trucks on the road, the more wear and tear that occurs and the more parts that we have to fix. But we do have the appropriate contracts in place to repair our plow trucks when we need to.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, Sean.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Just one more kind of informational item. I wanted to make sure that you all were aware that an important piece of legislation was signed by the governor recently, Senate Bill 927. After that tragic accident that happened on the freeway earlier this year, we worked on legislation that would require all motorists to move over when they see a tollway vehicle with its lights on. So in addition to this legislation, we're also going to be allowing red and white lights on some of our tollway help truck and emergency response vehicles, in addition to the amber lights that currently are on those vehicles. While certainly we don't think that those lights are already on the state police cars that are on those scenes, but this, I think, gives, if nothing else, an extra level of assurance to the drivers and the workers that we have out on these scenes that, they'll have maybe that extra visibility to people. So we're starting to install those that extra equipment now, and of course we're happy that that legislation was passed by the General Assembly and signed. So other than that, I don't think that I have any other items.
The way you spell within an existing procurement?
I don't know. Do the lights fall within an existing procurement?
Or do there are master contracts in place for emergency lighting. So
that we can use through CMS?
Correct.
Because they use them on other, I think IDOT uses them on some of their equipment, and of course the state police use them.
Right, there are master contracts in place for emergency lighting, yes.
So there, good question. I was not ready to answer, but thankfully John stepped in and had the detail.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Chris. Thanks.
Finance. Might say three items.
I think we actually have two items this morning. One will be for second item. First item is approval of funding level for the new 2014-15 workers' compensation claim year. The tollway does maintain a self-funded workers' compensation insurance program. We've done that since 1988. As required by our indenture, the funding for this program must be reviewed by an outside actuary to ensure that the claim program fund is actuarially sound. This year, Pinnacle Actuarial Resources is the actuarial consulting firm that we contract with to provide this analysis, has reviewed the claims trends of the program. And they've made recommendations for the amount that we should reserve for claims, that both for claims that have been opened through April of 2014, as well as claim projections for April or May 1 of 2014 through April of 2015. Based on their report, they are recommending, or we are recommending, a decrease in the reserves for all the open claims for prior claim years from 1988 through 2014. We're recommending a reduction in reserves of about $553,000, and recommending funding for the current claim year, which ends on April 30th of 2015, at $9,092,000 for that claim year. The actuary provided a range of costs from about $8.4 million to about $9.7 million. The amount we're recommending represents the midpoint of that range. This can be accommodated within the 2014 budget. It's actually slightly higher than what we had anticipated, but through savings in payroll and some of our other outside services, including collection fees, we believe we can accommodate this within the finance department budget.
Is Pinnacle, how long has Pinnacle been providing the actuarial services for us?
Well, it's been years, John, do you know?
Okay.
It's been years, but we've gone out.
We have done.
We've gone out for multiple bids.
Okay.
Very consistently.
Actually, we did this year as well, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Okay. And basically, are state police in this District 15 in here also on the count? They are.
They are
claims.
Included in this, yes.
And the frequency of claims have increased?
In the last year or so, the frequency has started to increase. Prior increases have really been related to medical costs and duration of disability, temporary disability payments, and we had a relatively flat number of claims in previous years, but we didn't see an uptick in this year.
Any questions?
Thank you. Do you want to go to the next?
Item three.
Item three.
Sure.
Item three is approval of the audit expense payments, essentially a payment to the Auditor General's Illinois Audit Expense Fund to compensate them for the costs of the contract with KPMG. KPMG did our external audit. The cost of that audit was $569,400. Recall that the Auditor General actually contracts with KPMG, assigns them to the tollway, and we're then responsible or obligated under the statutes to reimburse the Auditor General by a payment to the Audit Expense Fund.
Any questions? Any concerns about taking both items 1 and 3 together? Being done, do I have a motion to approve under finance items 1 and is it 2 and probably 2 now, or is it 3? Referred to as 3?
Still 3.
3. 1 and 3 together? So moved. Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full board consent agenda.
Thank you.
Procurement. John.
Thank you, Chair. Procurement has 7 items for your consideration this morning. And as I mentioned a bit earlier during my presentation, the first 3 agenda items relate to the total replenishment of our rock salt. And again, as previously mentioned, the weighted average price for all 3 of these procurements is $70.10 per ton. The first item is a request to utilize a renewal of the CMS master contract This will give us the ability to purchase a maximum of 86,040 tons of salt under this renewal. The weighted average price for the renewal is $55.50 per ton. Award is recommended to four vendors, Cargo Salt Division, in amount not to exceed $3,618,128.88 for 11 locations. Detroit Salt Company, in amount not to exceed $426,988.80 for one location. North American Salt Company, in amount not to exceed $395,776.80 for two locations. And Morton Salt for one location, the amount not to exceed $333,934.56. The second item is a request to utilize a new CMS master contract. This contract will cover two of our 15 salt dome locations, M11 and Route 251. The tollway can purchase up to 4,000 tons of salt under this agreement at a weighted average price of $126.34 per ton. Award is recommended to Morton Salt Incorporated in an amount not to exceed $505,340 for the one-year term. Third item is an award of a tollway emergency procurement. Again, since 13 of our sites didn't receive an offer through the CMS procurement, we acted right away and conducted our own emergency procurement to ensure an adequate supply of the material. Even though this is an emergency, we sent our tonnage requirements to 18 different salt providers, and we received two offers. Tollway will purchase 33,000 tons of salt under this agreement at a weighted average price of $101.35 per ton. Award is recommended to North American Salt Company in an amount not to exceed $3,344,442.09 for this one-time purchase.
John, can I ask a question regarding the diversity program? Number one, the BEP, the BEP goal is going to be met. On item two, there was a vendor demonstrating good faith efforts. Can you explain what happened there? And then that was item two. And item three, there's no BEP goal.
Okay, so yeah, you're right on with item number one. There was a BEP goal. Item number two, when a vendor, wait 1 second, let me just get the diversity detail here. Okay, so are you referring to the veteran part of the number two?
Yes.
Okay.
That's it, yeah.
So what the salt vendors did is they provided a good faith effort. What they did to commit to the goal, they demonstrated their efforts to CMS, and CMS found them responsive to that requirement, so they didn't disqualify them. So either the vendor meets the goal, or they have to demonstrate a good faith effort in trying to meet the goal. And as long as they demonstrate a good faith effort in trying to commit to the goal, they're allowed to continue.
Okay.